Okay, we're about to begin a sugya that is very, very relevant to Halacha L'maaseh. We have no doubt had Shiloh come up numerous, numerous times about what one is permitted to ask a non-Jew to do, what is prohibited to do, ask a non-Jew to do, what if a non-Jew does Malacha on his own on behalf of a Jew, what are the ramifications of that. So let's see if we can familiarize ourselves with the basic principles and then begin to try to give some real live examples as that was plays out for us in Shabbos. So let's start with the basic question, why is there any problem in the first place? After all, a non-Jew is allowed to do Malacha Shabbos. Shabbos was given to Jews. So why is it even a problem in the first place? So this is not a problem on the level of D'oraisa. Min HaTorah, in fact, it is permissible to ask a non-Jew to do anything. Because only a Jew is obligated to keep Shabbos. Nevertheless, the Rabbanan, the Chachamim, were concerned with a whole variety of different reasons. And Chazal instituted a prohibition with the Rabbanan that we call Amira L'Nochri. So we're going to use the terms interchangeably. Sometimes we use the words Amira L'Akom. The word Akom has a little bit of a more negative connotation. It's a little an idol worshiper. It doesn't mean literally an idol worshiper. It means any non-Jew is called an Akom or a Nochri or Amira L'Goy. It's all the same thing. So what prompted Chachamim, what prompted the Rabbanan to make this prohibition? Min HaTorah, there's really nothing wrong with asking a non-Jew to do malacha. So why did Chazal institute this in the first place? So the first of the sources, the Rambam, in Mishneh Torah, Hilcha Shabbos, Perek Vav Halacha Aleph, the Rambam tells us, also lomu l'nochri lasos lanu malacha b'Shabbos, what is not permitted to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for us on Shabbos, afa pi she'enu mitzuv ala Shabbos, even though the non-Jew himself is not obligated to keep Shabbos, v'afa pi she'amu mikodem b'Shabbos, even though you asked a non-Jew from before Shabbos. V'yafa b'sheir etzorach l'osu b'lacha l'yachar Shabbos. Even though I don't even need this malach to be done till afterwards. So I'm asking a non-Jew to do something for me either before Shabbos, or I'm asking him to do something for after Shabbos. But the bottom line is, all of that is included in the prohibition. V'dovah z'asa b'divrei sofrim. These are all prohibited mid the Rabbanan. K'dei sh'lo tia Shabbos kala b'eineyen. So the Rambam in one fell swoop gives what he thinks is the reason for Amira L'Akum, is that we are afraid that if we get into this culture of asking non-Jews to do everything, it's going to lead to a little bit of a deterioration of Shabbos, a little bit of a degrading of Shabbos in our eyes. And the next thing you know is, when I can't find a non-Jew to do it, so I'll do it myself. So we don't want to get into the attitude of, yeah, lights could go on, lights could go off on Shabbos, food could be put on fires, whatever you want, just find the non-Jew. Find what is sometimes called colloquially the Shabbos Goy. Bad idea, says the Rambam. Because if you have the quote-unquote Shabbos Goy doing everything for you, you may become that Shabbos Goy next. But the next thing you knew is, if you can't find him, you can end up doing the malacha yourself. And that was the source of the problem. So there are many other opinions in Rishonim as to other reasons why Chazal prohibited Amir Yachim. Nobody said Amir Yachim was permissible. That wasn't even on the radar screen. The particular reason for the Rambam, others debate. Some suggest that the reason why the Chacham prohibited Amir Yachim is part of a general prohibition about talking about malacha on Shabbos. I'm not allowed to talk about malacha on Shabbos. Forget about do malacha. Let's say a person wants to say, I'm driving to go to the mall after Shabbos. And this person sitting around lunchtime and saying, gee, let me tell you what my plans are for the night. Tonight I'm going shopping, I'm going to drive to the mall. You want to come with me? So that's a prohibition of what's called Dabar Dovar. The Pasuk tells us in the Navi Yeshayahu that not only are you not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos, you're not even allowed to talk about doing malacha on Shabbos. So when a person does Amir L'Yakom, he's talking about doing malacha on Shabbos. So that by definition will be a violation of Dabar Dovar. The reason why that reason may not be the all-inclusive reason, because if that would be true, then there would be no prohibition of Amir L'Yakom on Friday. Because let's say if I say to the non-Jew on Friday, do malacha for me, what could possibly be wrong? So that reason may be true some of the time, but not necessarily all the time. There is another reason that's given Rashi, actually, right? And he thinks one of the reasons why Amir L'Yakom is prohibited is because the non-Jew is acting as your shaliach, and to a certain extent we apply quasi-principle called shlucho shlam kemoso. What your shaliach, what your agent is doing, it's almost viewed as if you did it. So when you ask the non-Jew, please come into my house and turn on my lights. So it's viewed through the vehicle of shlichos as if you did it yourself. So again, these are all reasons mid derabanan. None of these reasons are compelling min haTorah. Therefore, mid daraisa, Amir L'Yakom is permissible, but mid derabanan it is prohibited for a variety of reasons. It's important to highlight that we're dealing with a prohibition mid derabanan. That's where we find certain leniencies. As a general rule in halacha, when we're dealing with Torah prohibitions, there are no leniencies, there are no coolers, there are no exceptions. The only time we could ever permit a Torah prohibition would be if someone's life is in danger. But short of that, it can be the most uncomfortable, most distressing, most biggest problem in the world. Tough. If it's also in the Torah, it's also in the Torah. End of discussion. Something that's only prohibited with the Rabbanan, not always, but sometimes Chazal lifted those prohibitions with the Rabbanan under certain extenuating circumstances. Again, the circumstances are not always the same, and different areas of Halacha are not always the same, and that's each area has to be, each shayla has to be addressed on its own merits. But there is a general room for some degree of, I don't mean it's literally wiggle room, but some degree of leniency when you're dealing with the Issurim of the Rabbanan. So it's important to highlight that the sugya of tonight, our topic tonight, is a Rabbanan sugya, not a Deraisa sugya. Therefore, we're going to bump into a few leniencies here and there. So perhaps the most important, the most practical, most common leniency is found in the second of the sources. This is the quote from the Shulchan Aruch in Orach Chaim in Siman Shin Zayin. Dovar she'eino melocha. Something which itself is not a melocha. Now it's important in Hilchos Shabbos. We've been learning Hilchos Shabbos about a year and a half. I mean, it makes it sound like we were learning every day for a year. Okay, every month, give or take the summers, and give or take Yom Tov, we've been learning kind of for a year and a half. So we've already seen that not everything on Shabbos is also to the same degree. There are some things that are melochos. Melochos are the worst kind of Hilchos Shabbos. Those are min haTorah. Those include the third and on acts of melocha, including all their subcategories. So again, some of the obvious examples, striking a match is a melocha min haTorah, driving a car is a melocha min haTorah, riding is a melocha min haTorah, doing laundry, melocha min haTorah, cooking, melocha min haTorah. Those are the real deraisas. Then you have a whole array of things which are prohibited on Shabbos, but only midirabbanan. Let's say, for example, moving muktzah would be a prohibition midirabbanan. Let's say, leaving food on the fire from before Shabbos in an inappropriate manner would be a prohibition midirabbanan. So you have a lot of things that are called chil Shabbos, but only called chil Shabbos midirabbanan. So the Shulchan Aruch begins by saying something which is davar she'eino melocha. It's not a melocha. Ve'eino osu lasosu b'Shabbos, elo b'shem b'shavos. The only reason why you're not allowed to do it is because shvus is a term that's used for an issa derabbanan in Shabbos. So if it's already a lower level prohibition, it's already not an issa deraisa. Mutar liyisrael loma le'akom lasosu b'Shabbos. You are permitted to ask a non-Jew to do it on your behalf on Shabbos. Not always. V'hu sheyisham if the following conditions are met. So again, we're dealing with a derabbanan, and I'm asking a non-Jew to do it. So it's already what we call a double derabbanan. It's already far, far removed from a Torah prohibition. It is permissible under the following circumstances. Mitzas choli, somebody is a little bit sick. Now, if he's really, really sick, if he's deathly ill, then you can do whatever has to be done, even in the Torah. But if the person is really, really sick, then we're not even talking about that. We're talking about someone who's a little sick. Mitzas choli, they're, you know, kvetching a little bit, they're, you know, their allergies are acting up, their back's hurting, their head's hurting, their stomach's hurting, you know, called the typical aches and pains of life. So a little bit of a choli, a little mitzas choli. Oh, yet tzarech l'davar tzarech harbe. Well, there's a very, very big need. Here we have a few more sheets here. There's one left, yeah. Or it's a significant need. Omi b'nei mitzvah. Or there's some kind of a mitzvah need. Ketza. What would that mean? Omi yisrael la'achal b'shabbos. You're allowed to ask the non-Jew to do as follows for you. La'alos b'ilon lahavi shofar litkoat kias mitzvah. Now, this wouldn't really be on Shabbos, it would really be on Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah. We'll leave that out for now. That a person has to blow shofar. It's Rosh Hashanah. And believe it or not, the only shofar happens to be on the top of a tree. Why is that so important? Because you're not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos. Why aren't you allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos? It's a prohibition in the Rabbanan, because we're afraid if you climb a tree, you may pull off a branch, you may pull off a fruit. You're not allowed to climb a tree. You're not actually even allowed to lean on a tree. You're not supposed to use a tree at all. A lot of people are not aware of this halacha. I have seen many, many children and adults, and everyone in the middle, who are leaning on trees on Shabbos, playing on trees on Shabbos, tossing things on trees on Shabbos. So it's absolutely prohibited, midirabbanan, to lean on a tree, to climb a tree, to climb down a tree. To such an extent, the Gemara discusses, what if a person climbed the tree on Shabbos, and now he wants to be chos b'tshuva. He feels so bad, oh yeah, I climbed the tree. So the Gemara says, you know what? If you climb down, that's another prohibition. So enjoy the Shabbos up there. Hope it doesn't snow. So the din is that if, let's say, a person realizes the only shofar down is on the top of a tree, so you're not allowed to climb the tree, even though there's no other way to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar, but what you are allowed to do is you can ask the non-Jew to climb for you. Omi Yisrael la'akla b'Shabbos to climb the tree for you to get the mitzvah. Oh, another example, l'havi mayim derechotzesh lo'irvu l'chotz bo'ametztayer. Well, let's say a person is very, very uncomfortable and they need water to wash. And the only water is outside the Erev. So you're permitted to ask the non-Jew to carry the water for you, assuming that the act of carrying is not a Torah prohibition. That gets a little bit tricky. Carrying on Shabbos is a Torah prohibition. It's one of the 39 melachos. But in order to constitute a real Torah prohibition of carrying, a lot of conditions have to be met. And most areas probably don't meet those conditions. So most areas that we're dealing with today are probably, I say probably, are probably not prohibited min haTorah to carry, are probably only prohibited min derabbanan. Now when one makes an Eruv, then it becomes permissible entirely. So again, let's say I have an area where there's no Eruv, but the prohibition of carrying for technical reasons is only min derabbanan, then I'm permitted to ask the non-Jew to carry the water for the mitzta'er. Also, not everyone agrees to this, but our minig is we pass kinetic mutter. So the bottom line, halach lemaisa, and then probably the most important, most practical rule of what we're going to talk about tonight is, if I want to know, Rabbi, can I permit asking a non-Jew? So you have to ask two questions. Number one, are we dealing with a Torah prohibition or a rabbinic prohibition? What kind of an action am I asking the non-Jew to do? If I would do it myself, would it be min haTorah, min derabbanan? If the answer is, it would only be min derabbanan. And I'm not doing it, I'm asking the non-Jew. And there's some really important need. It's a mitzvah need, it's a pain need, it's some other kind of a big tzarech. That would be permissible. Let's just give, just think through just a couple of possible examples that may meet this these kinds of criteria. Let's say, for example, a person, I'll just give an example that comes to mind, a fairly common example. You walk into shul and you realize the air conditioning wasn't set properly. And it's July. And it's very, very uncomfortable. So that definitely qualifies as a tzarech mitzvah. For people that are coming to shul, but not going to be able to daven, not going to be able to learn, and be very uncomfortable. That's called enough of a tzarech mitzvah to permit Amir Liakom on something which is prohibited by the Rabbanim. Now this becomes a multi-million dollar question. Is the turning of an air conditioner on or adjusting the thermostat, is that an issa bin haTorah or is that an issa bin derabbanan? If it's an issa bin haTorah, then we have a problem. If it's only a prohibition bin derabbanan, then we could plug in, no pun intended, this rule to Shulchan Aruch and say, well, it's only a derabbanan anyway, and therefore we could ask a non-Jew to do this derabbanan for us in Makom Mitzvah. So what's the answer to that question? That goes way beyond the scope of our discussion. It touches on a basic, fundamental machlokes about electricity in general, about electricity in the absence of lights. Turning on an electric light on Shabbos, an incandescent bulb, is an issa gama min haTorah. No question about that. That's for sure. Lo sabar eish b'chomosh b'seichem. That's also min haTorah. Other kinds of devices that don't involve lights, such as fans and air conditioning and vacuums and all that kind of stuff. So I did not ever say that it's mutter. It's clearly called chil Shabbos. No question that it's prohibited. But it is not 100% clear whether that is a Torah prohibition or a rabbinic prohibition. Because the machlokes is some of the gedolim, the Chazanish, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and others, till this very day, a major, major machlokes, deraisa derabbanan. This is the big nafkamina, a big, big practical difference. Can I treat electricity as being a derabbanan vis-a-vis asking a non-Jew to do it b'machom tzorech? This is a big, big question. The minug in Or HaTorah is to be mekel. We have been mekel in the past. We've been lenient about this question in the past. That had a fascinating encounter with somebody about 2 weeks ago. I went to at a port of somebody who used to live in Sierra. Doesn't live here on our side anymore. So doesn't daven in Or HaTorah anymore. But they used to daven in Or HaTorah fairly often, and we lived right on very, very close to here. And one of the woman who was the babysitter was the Ozeret in the house for many, many years. So she was at the vort. And I haven't seen it. They've moved already from here already a couple of years ago. I haven't seen this Ozeret. I haven't seen her for a couple of years. But I'm not saying necessarily I would have recognized her, but she recognized me. So she came running over to me, Rabbi, how are you? So I'm looking at her, who are you exactly? And I started to think, she used to daven here. Maybe she's a new member here, maybe everything. I realized that it wasn't a regular member of HaTorah when she stuck her hand out to greet me. So that was a little bit, whatever, we dealt with that also. But, and then I realized, I remember who it was. So she said, Rabbi, I remember the first time when the temple first started, how you called me in on a Saturday morning to come fix the air conditioner. So she remembered this halacha. So she said, and Rabbi, I remember I was like so scared because I walked in and there were like a lot of men standing there and they were all looking at me and I was very nervous. And she said to me, and you told me it's okay to relax. There's nothing to be nervous about. So thank you. I'm so touched. You remembered 15 years later. I don't remember that, but I put her at ease. And I said to her, yeah, well, you were the Yotzei, they did in Shulchan Aruch, Siman Shin Zayin. Okay, anyway.
So I understand when it's a case like, but it's clear cut, which is in your mind you decided or you felt that no one would come to shul, so therefore it was a must. What if it's like the tzorach clearly is there, but the mitzvah part, like right. For example, food. If there was a derabbanan way that your food could be warmed, and I know you don't want to go there, but let's pretend that's the underlying assumption. So the mitzvah is to eat a suda. So, but you could eat cold food, but most people wouldn't, and they therefore wouldn't enjoy it.
Excellent, right, excellent.
So how does that, right. Excellent. That there's very a lot good. Of gray in there.
Very good. We usually assume that to have an enjoyable Shabbos meal does constitute a tzorach mitzvah. However, it may fall short in this case of the following. And you're going to have to ask your husband this one, because we spoke about it on the Sunday morning this week. Right, that the issur, the issurim derabbanan of heating up food on Shabbos maybe isurim that are not called an isur maisa. It's not an action. It's the fact that the food is being heated up may be a problem. It doesn't, the chazanish writes, it doesn't matter whether a monkey took the pot and put it onto the fire. You have to take it off the fire. Because just the fact that the food is being heated up is a potential problem. You may come to stir the coals or just the flame, etc. So this, you're 100% right that the eating of the hot food is the mokha mitzvah, but the particular issa that you're referring to may be that one kind of issa that doesn't subject itself to this leniency. Okay, but good. But it's, otherwise, it's very, very good. It's an excellent point. So, right, okay, good. So that's going to depend, very good, excellent. So that's going to depend a little bit on what we mentioned before about hametzta'er. About being in a lot of pain is also qualifies as enough for Torah. So I'm going to have to leave that up to you. So some people will be very, very uncomfortable, depending on how hot it's going to be. And again, that is a certain degree of gray area, just about how uncomfortable it's going to be. But the starting point is that if we're dealing with the Torah prohibition, then all bets are off. Then you can't ask a non-Jew to do a Torah prohibition, even if there's a great tzorach. Unless it's a super-duper-duper great tzorach. What do I mean by that? So there's a fascinating halacha, it's actually based on a Gemara, on the third of the sources. It's a quote from the Shulchan Aruch, it's Siman Shin Vav. Mutar liknos bayis be'eretz Yisroel min ha'akol b'shabes v'chosim u'mala b'yarkos. You are permitted to buy land, buy a house, or buy land from a non-Jew in Eretz Yisroel on Shabbos, even though it's going to involve writing and signing documents. Now, in no shape or form are you going to be signing those documents, but you're going to be asking your non-Jewish lawyer or your non-Jewish agent to be signing on your behalf. So wait a second. I'm asking a non-Jew to do something. It's a great mitzvah to buy land in Eretz Yisroel. We want it to come in the Jewish domain. That's 100% true. But wait a second. But isn't writing your name, isn't signing, isn't that an issur min haTorah? So the Ramah has something fascinating to say about this. We're not going to go into this Ramah right now. It's a little bit off our topic. Maybe we'll do it another time, another place. But according to the overwhelming majority of the opinions, we're dealing with an issur deraisa. We're dealing with asking a non-Jew to write your name, to sign, to write the document up. That's a merely akhmad deraisa. How could that be? The answer is this mitzvah buying land there too must be so powerful, must be so important, that it has the ability to since turn over some of the rules we said. Our starting point was, if you're dealing with a deraisa, forget about a merely akhmad. You can never ask a non-Jew to do a deraisa if you ever, ever, ever. Not always ever, ever, ever. If it's a significant enough mitzvah such as buying land in Eretz Yisrael, so be it. And that's the halacha, believe it or not. You can ask a non-Jew to do a deraisa for you next time you want to buy land in Eretz Yisrael that you're afraid. Not that you're trying, Reuben's buying a land from Shimon. That's Reuben's buying from Muhammad. Reuben's buying from non-Jew. That's considered to be enough for Tzorech mitzvah. So I tell you two fascinating historical applications of this story. Maiseshoi, a real true story happened. This goes back to the years, probably around, I would say, around the 1920s or so, when Eretz Yisrael was under the British, and the British used to have these land auctions, and figured state-owned land, whatever it was, and which individuals want to buy the land, and so the Jews who were starting to build up Yeshuv and Eretz Yisrael in those years would send their representatives to go try to buy the land, to go auction, to win the auction, and some of the Arabs would also send their representatives, and this was an ongoing conflict. We know back from those years that the British were not always the biggest fans of the Jews, and they would sometimes try to do things to make it easy for the Arabs to win some of the auctions. So one of the great stunts that was thought up at one time was they scheduled apparently a very important auction on Yom Kippur. And they figured, well, very few Jews are going to come, even they're not yet religious Jews, who's going to come travel and drive and buy land. So they figured it's a no-brainer, the Arabs are going to get all the land. So Rav Kook was the Rav Rush, he was the chief rabbi at the time. He found out about this upcoming auction. And he instructed one of the people who was working in the land, whoever it was, he told him, you have to find yourself a non-Jewish driver and get yourself on Yom Kippur. Everyone else is saying it's not a tokef. Get yourself over to that auction and you buy up the land and you have the non-Jewish worker come with you and sign up all the documents for you. He says, because that's the din, that to purchase land for Jews in Eretz Yisrael, that's the din. You're allowed to violate even Amir Liakom, even on the Deraisa. So you're not allowed to sign it yourself. You could actually ask a non-Jew. So apparently the British weren't aware of this din in Shulchan Aruch. Rav Kook was aware of it, and kaha. So a couple of months ago, I was in Eretz Yisrael. I spent Shabbos in Shalavim. So I gave a shiur in Shalavim, and I don't remember why I spoke about. Oh, it was Pashas Lech. I remember why. It was Pashas Lech Lecha. I gave one of the shiurim that I gave was about the mitzvah of Yishev Eretz Yisrael. So I told over the story about that Shabbos and that Yom Kippur in back in the 1920s. So somebody came up to me and he told me a story that had happened in Shalavim years later. Apparently, this was I think at the end, like in 1947, like right before the partition time. So the British were also, right after the partition time, as they were pulling out, so they were basically setting up who's gonna get what. So basically, it was a free-for-all. The rule apparently was, in certain places, whoever comes in with a tractor first gets to keep that land. So whoever comes in first. So the British would pull out, and then the Jews would try to get their tractors in, and the Arabs would try to get their tractors in. So apparently there was a whole parcel of land where I think part of Shalavim is actually sitting on right now, where this happened, that on a Shabbos, so the British had set the schedule to pull it out at 9 o'clock in the morning. So the Jews in that area had hired some non-Jews to drive the tractors. You can't drive the tractor yourself, it's a Mr. Deraisa. But if you get a non-Jew to drive the tractor for you, so that's a merely Akabat and Drabbat, in order to be able to chop a right, be able to get the land in its to be under Jewish control. So that Psach of Rav Kook from 20 years before was put back into practice again. I think some of the boys who were in Shalavim are still sitting on that land out of Yom Hazeh. So next time you're in Eretz Yisrael and you want to buy some land from somebody, so you have to buy it on Shabbos, as long as you're not buying an apartment from another fellow Jew in Rechavia, but if you want to buy real land in other places, so then technically you're allowed to do it even on Shabbos itself. So again, as a general rule, Amir Liakom is not going to be lifted for Yisurim Deraisa, with one of the exceptions being Eretz Yisrael. Another possible exception may be for Bris Mila. Now we know that actually the Bris itself, to be done on the eighth day, is done on Shabbos itself, but only the Bris proper. No other preparations are allowed to be done. The mole is not allowed to drive, the mole is not allowed to heat up things, not allowed to do whatever other preparations he needs. Everything else has to be done before Shabbos, with the exception of the Bris itself. So I once had a fascinating shayla. Another Ravid once called me about there was a baby that was supposed to have the Bris on the eighth day. But on Friday, they realized that the bilirubin counts were still a little bit too high, and the doctor wasn't comfortable yet giving the green light to do the Bris. But the doctor said, listen, if you do another test Shabbat, Saturday morning, so it's very possible that the numbers will go down to the point where we're comfortable to give it, and you get the results in a couple of hours. You can technically do a Bris in the afternoon also. So the doctor said, if you want to do a bilirubin test on Shabbos morning, and we'll get the results by 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you can have the Bris in the afternoon. And the question is, well, how you do that exactly? Who's going to do all this bilirubin testing? So the answer is a non-Jew. You get a non-Jewish nurse, she's going to come to the house, she's going to draw the blood, they're going to present it to a non-Jewish lab, they're going to process everything, they're going to call to a non-Jewish doctor. It's going to be non-Jews from beginning to end, doing malachas deraisa for you. So can you justify that or not? So the answer is, according to many poskim, yes. According to many poskim, for the purpose of doing a bris on the eighth day, you can even ask a non-Jew to do malachas deraisa for you. So that was the psak that we gave, and I think that's exactly what happened, that the baby did pass the test, that everything was good, and they did the bris 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, based on the bilirubin counts that were done through the non-Jews, and even though it was an Amir Liakom, it was the Amir Liakom that was permissive. So the bottom line is that to ask a non-Jew to do things just stomp for the kicks of it, that's for sure prohibited by the Rabbanim for a variety of reasons. To ask a non-Jew to do the araisis for you, unless you're an attractor in Shalavim, or you're in a bilirubin lab somewhere in New Jersey, that's going to be out of the question. If you want to ask a non-Jew to do their abundance for you, if there's some big tzorach mitzvah, something like that, that would be okay.
Okay, one quick question. So this is all on Shabbos, but what about benefiting from hana from halacha that was done by a non-Jew on Shabbos?
Very good. It's the next line. Mom, turn the page. No, literally the next of the sources. So up until now, we've been talking about what you should or should not do. What if I didn't do anything? The non-Jew didn't ask me. You went ahead and did the halacha on my behalf. So comes the Shulchan Aruch and quotes, next to the sources, in the back of the page, Akam Shehidlik is a Ne'er B'Shvil Yisrael. If a non-Jew lights a candle for a Jew, also the Kol Afilu B'Shvil Huduk B'Shvilo. Nobody is allowed to use that candle on Shabbos, neither you nor any other Jew. So even though the non-Jew lit it for Reuven, even Shimon cannot use that candle. This is true for any malacha. If a non-Jew does a malacha specifically for a Jew, that would be a problem. So let's give a potential example of this. Say it's very dark in the room, and a non-Jew walks in and feels bad for you. You're sitting there squinting, trying to daven, you can't see. So the non-Jew turns on the light for you. So thank you very much, but no thank you. I can't even use the light. I gotta leave it. I can't even use the light because he did it specifically for me. That would pose a problem. What if he did it for himself? What if he wants to read also? Then it's okay. As long as he also did it for himself, that's fine. If he does it specifically for a Jew, that's a problem. If he does it for himself and the Jews, that would be permissible. So this gets very, very, very tricky. Very, 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 very tough line. So I'll tell you two stories. They both happen in hotels. Right? One goes back years ago. Some of you may remember. It's really like last generation, the old Homowack Hotel. Remember the kid? So the old Homowack Hotel. So I was once there. I was there many times. One Shabbos I was there, and I was sitting and learning in the shul late on a Friday night, and I was the only one there. And one of the non-Jewish workers walked in and turned off the lights. And then, as he turned off the lights, he realized that I was there. Oh, I'm so sorry! And he turned the lights back on again. What do you think now? So, at the time, I closed my Gemara and left. Because that's the din, that Acham Chilukas and Nebashul Yisrael, that's a problem. I'm not allowed to use that candle. Now, I'm not allowed to use that light. Now, during the day, I would be allowed to daven in that shul. Or if that would happen in the daytime, it would be okay, because yeah, I'm getting some sunlight anyway, so I don't really need the light. But in the pitch black at night, I need that light. However, after many years, I realized that it probably was machmir unnecessarily, that it would probably be permissible. Why? Many poskim say, that non-Jew didn't really turn on the lights for you. He really turned it on for himself. What does
he
that mean?
He made a mistake.
He's covering for life. He's not supposed to turn off lights when there are guests in the room. He's supposed to turn off lights when the guests have left. So he goofed. And now he doesn't want me to go running to the front desk saying, you guys, your maintenance guys, they're so mean, they turn off lights on the guests. So he's trying to protect himself. He's like, he doesn't love me. He's not knocking on my door every Friday night to come and turn on my lights for me. And that one poop crazy case where he did a mistake and I was covering for himself. So that's considered to be that may not be considered to be neneh from Alechas HaAkom L'Tzorcha Yisrael. So that would probably be okay. In hindsight, that would probably be permissible. However, I'll tell you a more recent case. I was in a hotel for Shabbos, and I got up early to learn in the morning, and I came to the shul, and it was fairly dark in the shul. Lights had already been turned off the night before, and it was fairly dark, but there was some light coming in from the hallway area, so I was able to kind of, you know, quetch it by the, get a little bit of light in to learn. And then one of the non-Jewish workers came by and saw me sitting there, and they turned on the light. Who are they turning on that light for? They didn't really make a mistake. So could you argue that's their job to turn it on? They're doing it. It's not really their job yet to turn it on. They were a nice guy. They saw him sitting there at 6 in the morning, so they wanted to be nice. They didn't like me. So I'm not sure. So I still continue to learn. Why? Because there was still a little bit of light from beforehand. So since I was able, the post can say, you're able to see a little bit without the light turned on in the non-Jew, so that would technically be okay. Remember, I was once with somebody it was a yontif. And you know in Eretz Yisrael, when you go down the steps in Eretz Yisrael, so after every two flights, it's like you have to press the lights again, because the lights go off. One of the most fascinating systems in place. So we were once walking down, remember yontif, we were once walking down, and as we were walking, so like the first half of the flight, you could still see from the door that's still open. And we're halfway down; it's pitch black. So there was somebody not from who was walking on the steps. So they said, "I'll do you a favor," and they pressed the light on. So that's a big problem because they're using a malach of a Jew. So a Jew did something that was also in Yom Tov. So I remember the person who I was with said, "Oh, thank you so much," and now. They cover their eyes and they close their eyes. They continue to walk down. Just be careful not to fall and trip. Because if you're going to benefit from the light, that's an issue. You're not allowed to do that. So you have to be careful. So the bottom line is that if a non-Jew does a malacha for you, then it's going to be a problem.
What about bringing up the issue with another Jewish person? If you're in Israel, it's Yom Tov Sheni for you, but not for them, or Erev Shabbos when we make Shabbos.
Very good.
Like
very good.
20, even 7,
very good. Excellent. So the answer to those two questions may not be the same. The answer to the early Shabbos that yes, you can ask another Jew is not to become a Shabbos, you can ask them to do malach for you, that's okay. Whether you can ask an Israeli to do malach for you, another Sheni is a big machlokes. That's a big question. Whether that's the same as the case of Tosefta Shabbos. Yeah. So get back to the story. So
this happens like a lot where I'm in a hotel for Shabbos and you want to eat your dinner in the hotel, like Friday night, so I leave the lights on for Shabbos, and then I want to go to sleep in the same room. So then,
Very good, excellent. So the only possible hetter, if there is, maybe a throwback to what we said before, that if you're really bitzar, a person is very, very uncomfortable, so then they're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it derabbanan. Turning off lights, not on, but turning off lights is probably derabbanan for technical reasons. The issue of turning off, extinguishing, probably doesn't apply to an electric bulb, depending on, based on other factors. So if a person really, really can't sleep in the room, they would be permitted to ask the non-Jew to turn off the light.
And one more thing was with being, so often, now they have electric locks on doors, so you have to tell the person downstairs, come upstairs to you, to the door.
Right, so that's also a big problem. It's a lot of these things are better to try to avoid, but if one really finds themselves stuck in these situations, a lot of these cases fall into the category of shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah, because a lot of these kinds of devices are not real devices. The lights are not real lights. They're not like burning filament lights, nothing. So these kinds of lights may only be the rabbanon, and it's only the shvus to shvus. Otherwise, I won't have a place to sleep. So very often we end up relying on these kulos. These are not great lechatchila. If one is choosing a hotel for Shabbos, why don't you try to choose one without these kinds of devices? But if you get stuck in one of these places, so then you can probably go on that.
But isn't Tsar, this is nothing to do with you, I'm saying let's extrapolate to another case, but like, wouldn't we assume that Tsar is not a situation that you can create for yourself?
Right, so that's what I'm saying. So you're not really supposed to do it. But if I have a choice, which hotel to go for Shabbos, I'm not supposed to go to a hotel on Shabbos. But if I know the only way to get around is using these kinds of keys, that's not a problem.
But
a person got stuck, you know, or whatever it is, there's no other way for them to function. So those very often a bidia.
And what if, in the case of like, let's say your concern was he thought he was doing his job, and therefore it may be mutter to have enough from his halacha. What if you were the one personally who hired them? So, like, for example, I had a bar mitzvah, and I had someone who was helping me out for Shabbos. So I ran out of hot water, and it's her job to be on top of what's going on.
She went and heated up water for you.
Or something like that. Can I?
That's not. They're not covering for their mistake. They're doing the halacha for you.
So then how does it fall into the umbrella of their job versus for you directly?
No. Their job is for you because you're hiring them, so they're doing it for you. The case was the person is
you think when they're hiring
because they made a mistake. Let's say, for example, the case that I gave before in the hotel, they weren't supposed to turn off the light when there's a guest sitting in the room.
Right.
So they goofed, and now they don't want anyone to yell at them, so they go ahead and they correct their mistake. Here, it's not their mistake. They ran out of water. People run out of water. So now when they go ahead and read what for you, they're cooking water for you, they're doing it for you.
So that was a question.
So if there's a concern of right, any of those kinds of things, would be risk. That would be no worse than asking the non-Jew, the Mokum Tzar, those kinds of things, right? Right. Yes, sir.
I'm just thinking about Jenny's question about asking like a fellow Jew, like if you bring a Shabbos and they haven't, what if you lit candles and your husband like is still rushing at home?
Right, and not that would ever happen in any show, but so that depends on just how close. I don't mean this in a bad way. How close the husband and wife really are. It means do you consider it to be one kibbutz Shabbos for both? Our general practice is that we don't. We have wives on bench left, and the husband's first having mincha. I mean, we do this all the time. So we assume that each person is mekabel Shabbos for themselves. So technically, if you already lit candles, you can ask your husband to do something.
But I said all the time. So
you have to take all the Shabbos after doing one. That's why I was just mentioning about extinguishing a flame.
That's why when
I remember asking about being on
the bar with
some people over Yantif, that if I had somebody in my house to turn
off,
that's not a good idea.
Is
that the same
thing? Well, generally, you're not allowed to extinguish a flame. Even on
Yantif,
you're not allowed to extinguish
a
flame.
That's the same concept.
You should try not to. Oh, very good. Excellent question. Let's say you realize that you left a light on, so you want to ask a non-Jew to open up the fridge door. So there, it's interesting. Even though the light is a light, which is a deraisa, but if you think about it, I'm not really asking the non-Jew to turn on the light. I'm asking the non-Jew to open up the refrigerator. That's what's called a psikresha. So I know that when I open up the refrigerator, the light's going to go on. So the amir of the akum was technically on the opening of the door, which itself is permissible. So according to most poskim, that would be okay. That Reb Shlomo Zalman was not 100% sure about that. Reb Shlomo Zalman thought that maybe since the only way you could turn on a refrigerator light, the normal way to turn it on is to open the door, maybe that's not a psikresha, maybe that's a dovra machav and mamish. But Rav Moshe disagreed with that. I think the minhag is like Rav Moshe. We assume that if you know you left the light on, you can ask the Nadru. The other problem is, you don't want to ask the Nadru 100 times, so you better ask him once, open and take everything out, put it somewhere else. Otherwise, you're going to spend the whole Shabbos putting things in and out.
No, because once it's open,
you just turn this off for you?
No, but I didn't tell him to, I didn't tell him to ask him to turn off the light.
No, so like, what happens if it's open? In theory, then you could, once it's open, then you can... No,
but if you close it.
But if you have like two parts to the door, and one's like, then you could once it's closed, you can actually seal it so that the light won't go on again when it's open.
Yeah, but who's going to seal for you? Is it not Jews going to seal for you?
Let's say you have like one of those Velcros that they have in the store, but the Velcro came loose. If one side is closed, and you can get in that way as long as the other side is open.
I grew up with those little refrigerator lights that you just kind of unscrewed.
Because
you know,
the
first thing we do. All the millions of times we've bought new refrigerators in our life, I count probably all two times. First thing we do is take the bulb and throw it as far away as possible.
Yeah.
Then we do. But now you can't even do it. Now you can't take them out, right? Yeah, you see, the problem, there's a general rule in halacha and technology, is that the higher technology gets, the more halachic problems it develops. Life is so much easier with old refrigerators, everything was easy. The good old ice boxes, before there were refrigerators, life was so. So you could argue that you probably could ask him to do that also, because otherwise you're not going to be able to access your food or shops. That's going to be a lack of a makom mitzvah. And turning off the light is probably a durabon anyway. So if you're really stuck, you probably ask him.
So let's say the light doesn't know how to turn on the air conditioner, doesn't know how to turn on the refrigerator. You let it specifically tell them, you have to press this and that.
Yeah, well, whatever is necessary for... Okay. If it's mutter, then you're allowed to tell them even explicitly what to do. Yeah. So there is the concept of doing things derech Rambam. We didn't even get to that part yet. But derech Rambam, I have a feeling Amir Lachem is going to be at least part two and maybe part three. So, because I assume that we would definitely knock off this whole page and today and see what's going to happen. So, you know what we do is let's make the following. We'll try to remind ourselves. Okay, I don't know when the next year is going to be. We'll try to remind ourselves that we left off right smack in the middle of the lights, and somebody has to remind me. Just remember two words. Dunkin' Donuts, okay? Remember Dunkin' Donuts? You can remind me, Chanukah, Shabbos Chanukah, Matzoy Shabbos Chanukah, Dunkin' Donuts. I'll tell you a secret, that Dunkin' Donuts makes extra donuts on Saturday for all the Jewish customers who are coming to Shabbos or the Chanukah parties. So you're probably wondering, wait a second, but it's after Shabbos anyway, not so simple. If a non-Jew does malach for you on Shabbos, you have to wait a certain amount of time. So, hang in there.
This Friday of Chanukah, I walked in about that question.
I know. I spoke about it in Jewel. Right. Anyway, bottom line is, the Shabbos probably will not be relevant for another 11 months, so hang in there. And I am hoping and praying our next Tuchel Shabbos show will be before that. So I don't know when it'll be, but it'll be hopefully before that. Okay, we'll stop there. Okay, so maybe we'll save the sheet. Maybe somebody put the sheet to the safe place, because we didn't finish them.